Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly show about the legislative session. I'm John Pimble. There are changes in the Iowa House of Representatives.
Will Representative-elect Bossman please approach the well?
The session started with one empty seat from Woodbury County because its representative resigned to run for the Senate. A special election for the House seat this month resulted in Republicans maintaining control of that district.
Congratulations and welcome. Please proceed to your seat.
The committees Representative Jacob Bossman is appointed to are the Veterans Affairs, Education, and Judiciary.
Could you guys just check and see if Representative Bossman's out there? He's our newest member. Okay, all right. With that, we'll let him introduce himself at the next meeting.
As of Monday, the Judiciary Committee has a new chair, Zach Nunn.
We are going to change out the chair. I'll be serving for the rest of the session as chair, along with Representative Hartzell as our vice, and obviously Representative Wolf as our ranking.
Nunn was appointed after the previous chair, Chip Baltimore, was removed after his arrest a few days earlier for drunk driving. Governor Reynolds offers her support to Baltimore during her Monday morning press conference.
My thoughts and prayers are with Representative Baltimore. It starts with admitting that you made a mistake, and he has done that. It starts with taking responsibility, and he's also done that.
Baltimore is forthright about his arrest when speaking on Iowa Public Radio's live talk show later that afternoon.
That was, and this is an understatement, probably the worst possible decision I could ever make. But I made it. I would like to apologize, first of all, to all my family, friends, coworkers, colleagues, my constituents in the state of Iowa for that terrible, terrible decision. I am, making no excuses for it. None. This is all on me. I made the decision. I'm prepared to and willing to accept full responsibility for that, in any way, shape, or form, and pay all of the consequences that I rightfully deserve. Because of that, I had a conversation with Speaker Upmeyer yesterday, and a couple of other phone calls the days before that. We talked about the chairmanship of the Judiciary Committee. I encouraged her that it was appropriate to make that step. She obviously agreed, and the last thing that I want is my personal situation to be a distraction from the important work that the Judiciary Committee performs.
Baltimore's arrest isn't the only reason he is in the spotlight. He authored an amendment last year, significantly changing a Senate bill about water quality. This bill has a long history in both chambers. It started in 2016 during the last General Assembly. It passed in the House, but did not get debated in the Senate. The General Assembly ended, killing the bill. When the Senate switched to a Republican for this General Assembly starting in 2017, they took up a bill with very similar language and passed it. The House didn't like it, so Representative Baltimore wrote an amendment that passed. But the Senate voted not to concur with the amendment. This means for it to go forward, it has to go back to the House for debate. All of this happened in the final days of the 2017 session. In 2018, this bill is a priority. Governor Reynolds has stated she wants the legislation to be the first bill she signs into law. The bills are centered around the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy released in 2012 by the Department of Natural Resources and Iowa State University. It's designed to reduce the amount of pollution running into Iowa streams that eventually feed to the Gulf of Mexico, where the combination of pollutants creates a hypoxic zone. Because Iowa is an agriculture-heavy state, some of these pollutants come from farmlands as water from the fields go into the streams, and in turn those streams feed larger bodies of water that end up in the Gulf of Mexico. There are many solutions the nutrient reduction strategy suggests, practices like planting cover crops to absorb toxins, no-till, or using a nitrification inhibitor when applying fertilizer. The Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, or as it is sometimes referred to as IDALS, helps subsidize farmers anywhere from $3 to $25 per acre to implement some of these solutions. All of the options are voluntary. It is estimated it will require around $4 billion of investment through a variety of initiatives over time to reduce the toxicity from agricultural runoff pollution in the Gulf of Mexico by 45%. The water quality bills are designed to help implement some of these solutions, but they have different ways of funding and different levels of accountability. To talk about these bills, Representative Chip Baltimore, author of the House amendment, and Senator Ken Rosenboom, floor manager of the Senate bill that passed last year, are guests on our talk show, River to River. It's hosted by Ben Kiefer and Joyce Russell. Also in the discussion is Carrie Johansson, manager of government affairs for the Iowa Environmental Council. Johansson says her organization appreciates the effort of the Senate and House as they attempt to get some kind of water quality bill on the books.
We know that Iowans really care about water quality. They want safe, clean water for drinking and recreation. They expect to be able to take their family to the state beaches. It's good for economic development in Iowa. It's good for Iowans. And so, we looked carefully at these two bills and last year, really thought there were some interesting new things included in the House bill that we liked. We thought the bill really looked at more of a watershed approach, which is a really critical part of this. We all live in a watershed, an area where all the land drains to one water body. And so, taking an approach that looks at that area of land, where the pollution is coming from, what are the big areas of opportunity, and then bringing together urban and rural people to work together to work out those issues, work on them together, work for solutions. That's a really Iowan way of addressing this.
And which bill goes more toward the watershed approach?
So we saw more of a watershed approach in the House bill. With that said, there is definitely... The funding in these two bills is not really adequate to the challenge that we're looking at here. A $4 or $5, $6 billion problem that we need a funding source that's going to be sustained, it's going to last over time. And we know that the 3/8-cent tax increase that would fund the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund is a funding source that would work really well there. It's something that's 70% of Iowa voters are supporting right now, including a majority of conservatives. And it's something that we think could be a real winner in terms of just a really long-term strategy, really turning the tide on water in Iowa.
Senator Rosenboom, address that last point there. Why not, Ray, finally, this was overwhelmingly supported at the polls by Iowans in 2010, 70%, I think, is the figure that Carrie mentions there. Why not finally raise the state sales tax a fraction of a penny to fund a law already on the books that would improve water quality?
Well, it's a fair question, and I'll respond this way. In the context of overall tax reform, I would listen to the debate on that. And I don't know what's going to come out of Ways and Means in the House and Ways and Means in the Senate. Obviously, tax reform is a topic that the governor and both chambers are considering. So in that context, I'd certainly listen to the discussion and go from there. Beyond
tax reform is the future. We're talking about something that Iowans decided they wanted in 2010, and it's just a matter of funding it with a fraction of a penny in raising sales tax. I didn't hear an answer in what I heard from you, though.
Well, okay. The answer is Iowans did vote in 2010 for a feel-good legislation in the sense that everybody's for a clean water and clean environment and so forth. If you'll notice the language in that 2010 referendum, the word tax increase was never included in that. So neither party has been willing to advance or present a bill to raise taxes on Iowans. That's a hard thing to do, and I don't expect them to this year in the absence of other tax considerations.
Representative Baltimore, has Carrie Johansson accurately described the difference between your bill? And maybe you could just elaborate a little bit more on this accountability that you think your more testing, more accountability on how that money is spent?
You know, I think any time that we're using taxpayers' dollars, it behooves us as legislators to make sure that those dollars are being spent for the purpose that they were intended and as efficiently and wisely as they possibly could be. The House bill that we put together last year was focused on not only a watershed approach, but also a collaborative approach between the ag community and cities, counties, municipalities, businesses, you know, whomever would be involved in water quality efforts, and trying to encourage and incentivize them to all work together to try to solve the problem. Now, obviously, this would require some taxpayer money, and one of the key features of the House bill was a financing program that would use some of these tax revenues and the stream of revenues that would come in to be bonded against to allow for some special financing for these collaborative groups to come in and identify and pay for their projects. As part of that special financing, we specifically put in our bill that it was imperative and important to, when you're applying for financing, to not only show that you have steps in place in order to be able to quantify and evaluate and measure the improvements that these projects are going to make, but also to install and implement some verification measurements and measures so that we could continue to evaluate whether or not you're actually getting the benefit out of these projects or not. You know, when we have a nutrient reduction strategy that has a goal of reducing nitrogen levels by 45%, it's kind of hard to tell whether you're ever going to get there unless you try to do some measurements. So we made sure that there's accountability for those dollars in the House bill. And I think that that's something that is certainly a key to that. You know, I think the one other point I would make quickly is, even if we were to pass a sales tax increase at this point, as I look at the two bills, you know, the House bill, I believe, is much better suited to taking that additional funding and ultimately getting to that point of $4 billion necessary to address this problem. My personal opinion, according to the numbers I've seen, if you take the sales tax money, if we ever get it passed, and put it into the Senate bill, you're never going to get there.
The major farm groups are in favor of the Senate bill, and that Senate bill was Governor Branstad's bill,
right,
last year. I'm looking at just one piece of the House bill. It the landowners would, or rather in the Senate bill, landowners would go right to IDOLs in order to get money for projects, cover crops, the various projects that farmers are adopting, whereas there are more complicated avenues for farmers to get the money. And, you know, supporters of the House bill would say more coordinated ways for that money to get, instead of just farmers saying, I want this, and it goes, some critics would call that scattershot. Are you willing to budge on that?
Well, listen, the strength of the Senate bill is that both the government in Iowa, IDOLs and DNR in particular, have a wealth of experience with cost share programs. And farmers have a wealth of experience with cost share programs. It's something that we know how to do. We do it fairly well, in my judgment. And to the point that's been made two or three times now about the billions of dollars needed to address this, I would point out that Iowa farmers, according to an Iowa State study, have put $2 billion, $2 billion with a B, of their own money towards soil and water conservation efforts in the last 10 years. That's the kind of cooperation that we have a history of doing in the state based on cost share programs, and I think that we continue to do that. This certainly puts some more dollars, cost share dollars, in place for more results. And I would also point out the other key word that comes up often in this discussion is collaboration. The Rathbun Water, Rathbun Lake is a good share of that's in my district. The Rathbun Land and Water Legacy has a wonderful track record for over 30 years working for soil conservation, water quality issues. Keep in mind, they provide drinking water for 90,000 residents as well. So I guess I think the Senate bill capitalizes on what we do well in this state and builds those efforts.
Representative Baltimore, with all the major farm groups on the side of the Senate bill, I'm hearing some people say, well, we should just go ahead and send the Senate bill down, let the governor sign it, and then we'll work on this later. What are your chances really in the House of influencing this?
Well, you know, we ended session last year the same place that we're at now. And one of the saddest things that I've found is that over the last 8 months, instead of trying to find ways to make these two bills come together or work out a compromise or take the best of both bills, most of the, primarily one of the major farm groups and some other folks have spent the 8 months trying to arm twist House Republicans into swallowing the Senate bill. There's a lot of talk, and it's all talk, about let's just pass the Senate bill and we'll continue to work on it. Well, where the hell you been the last 8 months? Where have been the talks in terms of trying to come up with some compromise? And so personally, I think that the House bill does a much better job of spreading responsibility for our water quality problems amongst all of the players. And unlike, in my opinion, the Senate bill, it doesn't just lay it at the farmer's feet. You know, one of the main driving factors of our water quality problems has to do with weather and climate. And that's not solely the farmer's responsibility to make sure that there are solutions. So I'm firmly convinced that the House bill is much better in terms of trying to reach the collaborative approach necessary to more comprehensively solve our water quality problems.
We're just about out of time, so I'm going to ask both of our lawmakers here what chances you give for compromise here. Representative Baltimore sounded not like he doesn't think the chances are very good. What chances do you give for this bill, for the House and Senate to work out a compromise here?
I'm still guardedly optimistic that we'll do it.
And Representative Baltimore?
Snowball's chance in hell.
Representative Chip Baltimore and Senator Ken Rosenboom from Monday afternoon's Iowa Public Radio talk show, River to River, hosted by Joyce Russell and Ben Kiefer at the Capitol's Law Library. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly show about the legislative session. I'm John Pimble.
Please recognize Representative Wills for consideration of Senate File 512.
On Tuesday morning, the House begins debating the water quality bill. As the bill is discussed, they are here to recede from Representative Baltimore's amendment that passed last April. This action is designed to make it possible to pass the Senate's original bill with no changes. Representative John Wills is the floor manager.
Today we have an opportunity to send a water quality bill that was originally drafted in the House and voted on by many of you to the governor. This bill provides $282 million over 12 years to the nutrient reduction strategy using a science-based and collaborative watershed approach. The non-point source pollution portion of this bill establishes a water quality agricultural infrastructure program to reduce nutrient loads and associated sediments and pollutants.
A non-point source of pollution comes from a general area, and it can't be pinpointed to only one thing. When it rains, sediment collects and flows across the land until it falls into a body of water. A point source is where pollution can be traced back to a specific spot, like a wastewater treatment facility.
The point source portion of this bill will create a grant program for cities and utilities. Disadvantaged communities, a grant program that hasn't been funded for many years, will be funded under this initiative. The bill builds upon the successful implementation of the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy and provides for long-term and sustainable funding. This is just the beginning, not the end.
Representative Art Stade opposes. Stade questions what it will do for Iowa's waterways.
We have more than 700 waterways that are polluted in this state. What will this bill do to turn that around? No one knows. This is a trickle in the bucket, a trickle. I had hopes that after I thought we were done with this bill at the end of the last session, I had hope that we would get together in a bipartisan way and work on a comprehensive bill that had benchmarks, that had goals, that had measurements, that had monitoring, and a bill that would make us accountable and those who use these funds, that there were accountability measures, that what we did to reduce water pollution actually did it. The governor spoke here. She wanted to have a water quality bill. I don't want a bill. I want quality legislation that makes a difference. I would have thought that she wanted her legacy to be the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust to be her legacy, and additional water quality measures. But that isn't going to happen if this bill passes. We know this will be it. This will be the political water quality bill, and then nothing else will happen. That's my fear. Let's take a step back. Stop what we're doing this morning. Let's get together and develop a good water quality bill that's got the measures and monitoring that we need to make a difference in this state so that the public will know that.
Representative David Heaton asks floor manager Wills to yield and explain what future legislation the Senate and governor have promised to work on with him.
You reassured me yesterday that work is not done on this bill, that you are proposing additional legislation to address some of what you feel needs to also be in this bill that currently isn't there. You spoke of three things that you're working on so far. Could you tell the body what you have in mind with this bill that you're working on?
Well, as I said in my opening remarks, this is just the beginning of the conversation. The governor has stated she'd like to continue the discussion. The Senate would like to continue the discussion. The House would like to continue the discussion. So there are three items that I've begun to work on. I've traveled half the state throughout this summer, talked with people, both Democrat, Republican alike, multiple organizations. And the three things that we've arrived on so far that the Senate is interested in taking a look at is allowing rural water associations to access these dollars for non-nutrient related items. For example, total suspended solids and bacteria. When you treat those, you actually also treat nutrients. So it's a good fit. Allowing industry who is named in the nutrient reduction strategy to get access to these monies for point source pollution issues. And then also there is a program called NREC, which we enabled 3 years ago, which monitors private conservation on private lands that has no government funding and looks at what kind of conservation, how much is being done on private lands, and looks at where those are at and how much is being done across the state that we don't really know about because it's being done privately.
Representative Charles Eisenhart raises concerns about funding the bill as a deappropriation bill for the second year in a row is coming.
We have to figure out how to pay back a debt on last year's budget. We got to make significant cuts to this year's budget. And we got to figure out where we're going to come up with the money for next year's budget. And we're already talking about going back on some of the promises that we made in past years, particularly to cities and counties, to help do that. Meanwhile, we're proposing to backtrack on a bill that would actually give those same cities and counties access to resources to address a serious problem that they have in the name of water quality. So I'm not sure that we can afford even the Senate version now, given the fact that we can't promise taxpayers that we're going to get results so that they can see what they're paying for.
After 35 minutes of debate, Representative Chip Baltimore is the last speaker. He is one of a handful of House Republicans to oppose the Senate bill.
Over the last few days especially, I've learned some very difficult lessons about integrity. And over the last year or so, working on water quality, I've learned a lot more lessons about not only integrity, but about leadership. And I don't know about all of you, but I did not come down here to check a box. And just because water quality, the words water quality are in the title of a bill, does not make me proud to vote for it so that I can put it on a postcard when I go campaign. It befuddles me, quite honestly, to understand and comprehend what kind of leadership we are showing Iowa by receding from a wildly bipartisan bill that passed, I believe, 79-19 out of this chamber with the House amendment to this Senate file.
Baltimore says he is skeptical either legislative body will propose additional water quality bills in this General Assembly.
I will literally be shocked if any substantive bill comes out of this session in terms of improving Senate File 512. Because if it could have been done, it would be being done right now. But there's an organization that doesn't want that to happen. So I would be shocked if it does.
Baltimore is referencing the Iowa Farm Bureau, who have lobbied for the Senate version. Baltimore's House amendment loses. The Senate version of the bill passes, with Republican support. Four Democrats also vote for it, and four Republicans vote against. The bill moves to the governor to be signed into law. This is the weekly legislative show, Under the Golden Dome, from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
The beginning of a new state constitutional amendment is moving forward. At the House Judiciary Subcommittee, the chair makes a case to strengthen Iowa's gun laws through House Joint Resolution 13.
This is a weighty issue, and this is something that can have a lasting impact on Iowans for generations to come.
Representative Matt Winschittle has been an advocate for expanding Second Amendment rights. Last session, he was the author of a large bill that, among many other things, now makes it legal to carry a concealed pistol to the Capitol if one has a permit. He is the sponsor of this constitutional amendment.
The proposal before us is to put Second Amendment protections into our state constitution if the voters of Iowa so choose once this gets on the ballot. For those that aren't aware, the process is it will pass, if it passes this General Assembly, that it will move on to the next General Assembly. It will then have to be passed again by that new General Assembly and then be sent to the ballot in 2020, where voters will have the final say on it.
Winschittle says this amendment will not affect previous legislation restricting firearms. He says it is necessary because the state constitution lacks definition of how one is to defend life and liberty and property as stated in the very first article of the state constitution. He proposes this amendment be placed in 1A, making it the second clause in Iowa's Bill of Rights.
The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes the fundamental right of the people to acquire, keep, possess, transport, carry, transfer and use arms for all legitimate purposes. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny. Now, I'm not a legal expert. I am a knuckle-dragging railroader when I'm not wearing a suit and tie. So I had to do some digging on the strict scrutiny standard, and it is the highest level of judicial review. It means that if the government is to regulate a right, which we declare is fundamental, and the Supreme Court of the United States has already found to be fundamental, that the government will have to show a compelling interest in the need of that regulation. Public safety is generally one of those needs, and that will meet that standard for strict scrutiny. I want to be very clear. People have already asked me if this is an attempt to try and negate the current regulations we have in the state of Iowa, or somehow move us to some unregulated system of carrying firearms. This is not an attempt to do that. The intent behind this is only to clarify the rights that we already have and provide the protections in our Constitution on a state level. So I will say that again. This language is not an attempt to try and circumvent the laws and regulations the state currently has or to have them overturned in some future court ruling. That being said, I'd like to hear from the members that have a voice and opinion on this. So, who would like to speak?
Richard Rogers of the Iowa Firearms Coalition voices his support.
Nearly every living organism displays an instinct for self-preservation. Certainly all human beings have the desire, the need, and the right to defend themselves, their families, and their communities. Their ability to do so effectively is often dependent upon having tools, arms, available for that purpose. In the past, these tools may have been a stick, a blade, or a bow. In the modern era, the most effective tool for this purpose is typically a defensive firearm. The right to keep and bear arms arises directly from the universally acknowledged right of self-defense. This right to arms has long been recognized in English and American law, and its protection was enshrined in our national constitution as the Second Amendment with the adoption of the Bill of Rights.
Connie Ryan from the Interfaith Alliance is opposed and questions, why is it necessary?
If the Second Amendment is the ultimate definer of the rights of people to bear arms, why is this necessary in the state?
Many reasons, and I'll just list a few of them. Number one, there's 44 other states that have some enumerated protection for Second Amendment rights. Iowa is lacking that area, and I believe Iowa citizens deserve more. And again, they have the opportunity to vote on this if we pass it through two general assemblies, so the ultimate decision will be in their hands. Number two, when the Supreme Court undertook some of its more recent decisions in Heller v. D.C. and McDonald v. Chicago, they were on slim majorities that those decisions were handed down, 5-4 in each. And those were very crucial decisions to laying out how the Supreme Court viewed the Second Amendment and what it actually interpreted down to the citizens of the United States. I believe that if there were ever a change in the court in the future, without Iowa having specific protections in our own state constitution, it could have a negative impact on Iowa's right to keep and bear arms. That's why we have spelled it out, we've enumerated this in such a meticulous fashion, so that if there ever were an adverse decision, we could have our own state constitution to fall back on and provide those protections.
I guess I would disagree that Iowans' rights to bear arms would be questioned because we do have the constitutional rights to carry and to have weapons that are available. So you mentioned that it's not intended to have an impact on current laws. If you would, is that possible? With the current language, if it is approved by the voters, would there be impact on current law, whether that be federal or state, such as background checks and other precautions that we have in law that help to create a safer environment for our communities, our children? I'm particularly interested in ideas where folks can carry at all times on school grounds, for example. We just had a shooting this week in Kentucky where two young people were killed. The mom of one of those children received a phone call from her daughter as she was dying. And so I'm concerned about the impact on the current laws, including carrying on school grounds.
Would you like to restate your question?
My question is, you stated that it is not intended to have an impact on current laws. How can you keep that from happening given the nature of the language of the amendment?
I cannot predict the future, nor can I determine what a future legislature or a judiciary may or may not do. But that's why my language here today is being very clear, so that that this is not intended to overturn any state laws or deregulate somehow. If there ever was a case to go before a judge in a court or the Supreme Court, I've looked at some of the legal history. They do go back and look at legislative intent, and that does factor into the decision. How much? I don't know. I'm not a judge. But that is why I'm stating this very clearly, that that's not the intent. We also have it spelled out that any and all restrictions, so we're saying that there can be restrictions, are subject to strict scrutiny. We're not saying that this is going to somehow remove every restriction. That's not what this says. We acknowledge in this language that there are restrictions that are lawful and constitutional, but that if the state, the General Assembly, chose to put a new restriction on weapons or the right to keep and bear arms, that it would be subject to that high judicial review of strict scrutiny, where the government would have to show a compelling interest for the good of the people. So, again, I can't predict the future, but our intent is not to overturn any of the regulations. I do take exception with trying to turn this into a guns on school grounds debate. That's not what this is about, and it shouldn't be about that. Those are separate pieces of legislation that other legislators have filed. They are not incorporated into this, and I sincerely hope the members of the media are taking note of that. This is about amending our state constitution and giving Iowans the opportunity to have the final say about Second Amendment protections in the state of Iowa.
44 states have a similar constitutional amendment, but of those states, there are only three that have strict scrutiny in the bill. The sentence in question is, "Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny." Strict scrutiny is a judicial review, and in the case of this amendment, there are concerns it could be legally challenged. Here's the definition of strict scrutiny from LegalDictionary.net. The term strict scrutiny refers to a level of study or analysis the courts use to determine the constitutionality of a law or of the actions of a governmental body. The most rigid standard of judicial review, strict scrutiny, is used to determine whether an action or legislation violates constitutional rights. Representative Liz Bennett is part of this subcommittee. She is concerned about strict scrutiny being in this amendment.
It really is still a red flag for me that a vast minimum of states have this strict scrutiny language. I understand that the intent may not to be to open the door to future legislation on gun bills, but I think as legislators, it really is our job to look down the road and understand what the unintended consequences will be. So I will not be supporting this bill.
Good. A couple of things just to follow up on some of your questions. Number one, this is not intended to prohibit future legislation on the regulation of firearms or the carrying of firearms in our state. This can't do that. You can't bind the hands of a future General Assembly. All this does is set the foundation for our Second Amendment rights and our state constitution. As far as court cases that may come about in the future, I can't predict that. I don't know what the weather is going to be like tomorrow either. So it's not something that I can sit here and provide anyone a guarantee that absolutely this or that will not happen. As far as the strict scrutiny standard goes, in 2014, Missouri passed their constitutional amendment. They actually were amending their previous RKBA, or Right to Keep and Bear Arms Amendment, and they added in strict scrutiny into their constitution. There was a case, State v. Merritt, where a felon was trying to say that he should have his rights, firearm rights, restored. The state found against him and in favor of the state regulation, saying that it was not unconstitutional for the state to regulate and put a provision or have provisions in the code books that said felons could not have firearms. And I just want to read a little excerpt to you. The Missouri court noted in Merritt that regardless of the 2014 amendment, so even if they hadn't had the strict scrutiny standard in their constitution, regardless of the 2014 amendment, the strict scrutiny standard would already have been applicable because the Supreme Court ruling in McDonald, that was McDonald v. Chicago, held that the right to bear arms was a fundamental right that applied to the states, and Missouri reviews laws affecting fundamental rights under the strict scrutiny standard. Again, I'm not a legal expert nor a lawyer, but I'm assuming that the standards that Missouri is applying in this, as far as the legal practices, would still be applicable here in Iowa. So the strict scrutiny standard for all those other states out there, the 41 that have some type of Second Amendment language in their state constitutions, my assumption is that they're still going to have to apply the strict scrutiny standard to anybody that would challenge any of their firearm regulations in the state. So whether we had it in the bill or not, that's still going to be applicable in my estimation. But in our highly litigious society that we live in today, I've learned in 12 years of being down here as a representative of the people that you want to be very clear with the language that you put into legislation. You want to make sure that everything is spelled out so there's not ambiguities and there's not opportunity for someone else to read a misinterpretation of the intent of the legislature. That's why we have spelled this out so clearly and we have incorporated the strict scrutiny standard into this proposal. Fair enough?
Thank you for your answer.
You're welcome.
The subcommittee votes to advance the constitutional amendment. It will be taken up soon by the full Judicial Committee. If last year's passage of a large Second Amendment rights bill is any indication, this is likely to end up on the chamber floor for debate. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm your host, John Pemble. A de-appropriation bill is coming. The Senate just drafted theirs. It eliminates $50 million from this year's budget. That's 30 more than what Governor Reynolds proposed. Cuts include $4.8 million to the judicial branch, $10 for Department of Health and Human Services, $5.4 to community colleges, and $19 to the Regent Universities. The House makes its recommendations next, and it's a good bet a de-appropriation bill will make it to the chambers next week. I have a lot of help in making this show from our reporters and producers. Thanks to State House reporter Joyce Russell, our talk show team producers Lindsay Moon, Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and talk show host Ben Kiefer. Iowa Public Radio's news program director is Catherine Perkins. Edit support comes from Iowa Public Radio news director Michael Leland. Every Friday, a new episode of Under the Golden Dome will pop up in your favorite podcast program, the Iowa Public Radio app, as well as our webpage, iowapublicradio.org. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.